We ended last week with the theme of Pesach, the overall psyche that a person needs to reach on the Seder night is the concept of Kabbalat O Malchut Shamayim, the acceptance of the yoke of heaven. I'd like to speak about today the same idea as Pesach being Kabbalat O Malchut Shamayim, the acceptance of the yoke of heaven, but from a completely different vantage point, reaching the same end from a completely different direction. And that is to take a look at the theme of Pesach, see the way it works itself through the Haggadah, and then try to take this theme into our lives practically. The Nesiv HaShalom clearly states, and this is in source number one, Chag HaPesach Yisodo Emunah. The Yisod, the foundation of Pesach, is the concept of Emunah, the concept of faith in God. The Leil HaSeder Leil Gilui Shechina Hu Bimchinat Rosh Hashanah Lamunah. In a certain respect, Pesach is a Rosh Hashanah. It's a time of a new year, but it's a time of a new year, Bivchinat Emunah, with the aspect of Emunah, the aspect of faith in God. As our rabbis have stated in the Siva Shalom, continues, Bizchut ha'emunah nigalu avotenu mimitzrayim, u'bizchut ha'emunah atidin liga'el. The key aspect which was found within the Jewish people that made them worthy of redemption is the concept of emunah, the concept of belief. And it is this aspect that atidin liga'el, that we will be redeemed in the future. And the Siva Shalom explains very simply. Paro, as we know and we've discussed, was someone who had the aspect of kfira, of disbelief. He said, why should I listen to God? Lo yadati et Hashem, I don't know God. Why should I listen to His voice? So the whole Pesach experience, as we'll continue speaking about today, is the experience of v'yedu mitzrayim kani Hashem, that the Egyptians will know that I am God. And not only was the experience for the Egyptians to know I am God, but it's the experience for us as a Jewish people, who constantly focused our whole celebration of the calendar year, as well as many commandments, are focused around the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the story of the Exodus, because it is the story of the foundation of Emunah, the foundation of faith. If we understand that the whole point of Pesach is to instill and inculcate faith within us, it's a holiday whose focus is faith, so then we can understand that famous statement we spoke about last week, that even if we are kulanu chachamim, kulanu nivonim, even if we're all wise and learned people, we have a commandment to speak about the story of the Exodus. V'chol hamar b'lasape hareza meshubach, one who elaborates is praiseworthy, because if the whole concept is emunah, the whole concept is faith, so there's no end to talking about faith. Faith is something you can speak about over and over again to really be able to inculcate faith in our life. So that's why, if it's just a story about the Exodus of Egypt, so then there may be an end point. I've spoken about it enough. But if the whole point isn't just speaking about an Exodus experience, a historical event that happened in the past, but rather is to try to bring us to a level of emunah, a level of faith, so then there's no end. Because faith is something we need to constantly work on and constantly develop within us. This explains the opening section of the Haggadah. We begin the Haggadah by saying, Ha lach ma'anya di'achlu avasana v'mitzrayim. Source 3, this is the plain poor bread that our parents ate in the land of Egypt. Whoever is hungry, come and eat with us. Whoever needs a place to stay, come make Pesach with us. Very strange way to begin off the Seder. You're sitting around your table. Everyone who you've invited is already there. And now you make a public declaration. Whoever would like to join us, please join us. Where should the declaration be made? Not in the privacy of your home. At the end of shul, the gabbai should get up and say, Kol tichsin yesevyecho, whoever needs a place to stay, you're invited to whoever's home it may be. You're sitting at your Pesach Seder night, this is the time to invite people? It doesn't seem to make sense. So explains in the Siva Shalom in Source 4 at a much deeper level. He says, when we talk about the halach ma'anya, this is the poor man's bread that we ate in Egypt, we're talking about emunah pshuta, the simple faith that the Jewish people had. The lechem oni, the poor man's bread, the flat bread of the matzah, represents faith of the simplest nature, the emunah pshuta, the faith in God. And that's what we say this evening. All who are hungry, we're not talking about physically hungry. We're talking about lo ra'av lalechem lo tzama lamayim, as the verse that Amos speaks about, not one who's hungry for bread or thirsty for water, but rather el dvar Hashem, for the word of God. Who are we inviting to come to our Seder? We're inviting those who are sitting around us to partake of the experience of learning about God. The experience of the lechem oni, of the simple man's bread, the experience of emunah, the experience of faith. And that's what we emphasize this evening. This halach ma'anya is really the opening theme of the Seder night. If you want to come, kol dichsin, anyone who's hungry is invited to join us as we go through an experience trying to understand what emunah, faith in God, is all about. Because emunah, this faith, is the key component. So we also see by the wicked son who says, source 5, what does he say? Why do you go to the trouble of doing these mitzvot? And we end off by saying, if the evil child had been in Egypt, he would not have been saved. So explains Rabbi Mirsky in Haggadat HaGonei Halacha very simply. He says, ha'emunah ba'geula hitnai lanigalim lishchotba. You don't want to know what the condition is for a person to have been redeemed? One condition. That's belief in emunah. You believe in the redemption, you'll be redeemed. If you don't believe in the redemption, that aspect of emunah which is lacking in the wicked son, so he would not have been worthy of being redeemed. And Rabbi Mirsky brings us other examples, the Netziv, that says the reason the Jewish people did not enter the land of Israel in the time of the Jews in the desert was because they lacked the belief in the ability to enter the land. And he ends this essay, Rabbi Mirsky, by saying that's why there are people who this night of Pesach, Leil Shimurim, the night of watching, who don't lock their doors. And this is a statement of saying, I believe the Messiah is going to come tonight. Do I have to then spend time unlocking my doors? No, Elijah will come right in. It will be an open door policy. And you leave your doors open that night. It's a statement of, I believe in the Geula. I believe in the redemption, us today, not only them there. That this is a component to be redeemed, is to actually believe in the redemption and to act upon it. So I think what we've established is the theme of the evening is the theme of emunah, a theme of faith and belief in God. And it's this component that made the Jewish people worthy of redemption. What I'd like to do together today, in the time that we have, is to look at three components of the Seder evening, a component of the story, a component of halacha, of Jewish law, and a component of the liturgy, the songs that we sing, and take a look at each of these three sections, or one example of each of these three sections, and see how emunah, faith in God, is the theme that runs through the entire Seder night. The first section is the section of the story section, the section of the tenth plague. We discussed some of these ideas a number of months ago in Parshas Bo, but we'll add a couple of new ideas as well. We're aware that the Makos, the ten plagues, are divided up into three sections. The first three, as Rabbi Yehuda divides them up, are Ditzach, Dam, Sfardei, Akinim. The next three are Adash, Arov, Dever, and Shechim. And the last three are Be'achav, Barad, Arbe, Choshech, and Bechorot. So why are they divided up into three, three, and three? Why not two, two, and two, or four, four, and two, whatever the mathematical equations are? Why three, three, and four? So explains in Source 8 the Kleyakra that says that Paro denied three basic aspects. He denied the existence of God, he denied God's involvement in this world, and he denied that God is all-powerful. And therefore, at the beginning of each of these three sections, God has a mission statement to come to say what each of these three sets of plagues are going to prove. The first three, the mission statement is clearly stated out, Leman teda ki ani Hashem, that you will know that I am God, which was the first problem of Paro. The next three, God clearly states that you will know that I am God, the Kerif Haaretz, among the land. That not only does God exist, but there's an aspect of Hashkocha, God is involved. And you clearly see that with the wild beasts, that the wild beasts went to the Egyptians, but not to the Jews. God is clearly able to make a distinction. He is involved in this world. And finally, the last three, Ki Ein Kamoni V'Kol Ha'aretz, the mission statement that's stated at the beginning of the last set of plagues, is that Paro will know there's none like me in the whole land, that God is able to control the entire universe as well as all the constellations by creating darkness, killing the firstborn, etc. All three sets of plagues are coming to prove one and the same thing. God exists. I am God. I'm involved in this world, and there is no other God except for me. So Rabbi Mirsky goes, the Siva Shalom goes on and explains that we can understand the division of plagues even on a deeper level. And he says the three sets of plagues are found in three arenas of life, of the world, really. The first three are found on level ground or beneath the ground. The dam, the blood, the sardeya is also in the water. The kinim is the dust of the ground. That is to show that God is involved below the earth or on earth level. The second, that you will know, ani bekerev haaretz, I am in the land. All of these plagues happen on land. The wild beast, the dever, the beast dying, the shechin, the boils happen on the land. And finally, the last three are all three things, or four things really, above the land. The arbe, the locust that created this darkness, the barad, the hail, the choshech, the darkness, the killing of the firstborn, these are showing that God is above the land. So this division that Rabbi Yehuda makes is to show that God is all-powerful and God is involved in all elements of the world. Things on the ground level, things on the ground itself, and things in the heavens. The final division I'd like to speak about or mention is the Maharal, who's very beautiful. The Maharal says in Source 11 that it's much deeper than that. He says you can really trace among all the plagues that we have a continuum starting from rock bottom, blood, which is down beneath the ground, so to speak, then Sardeya, the frogs, which are on the river, and then the kinim is on the ground, and everything goes up step by step, as the Nesiva Shalom points out, based on the Maharal in Source 11, where you get higher and higher and higher to show that God is in control of everything around, till you end off with the choshech, with the darkness, that God is in control of even the constellations. And then says the Maharal, and this is very powerful, where the arrow is in Source 11, and afterwards with Makat Bechorot, what's the Makat Bepatish, what's the grand finale, is the killing of the firstborn. Sheba Heralo Kadosh Baruch Hu, that God showed, Shehu HaMoshel Gam Al Nishmat HaAdam, that God is not only in control of the world, He's in control of the soul of man. Ubir Tzoto Notla Hemenu, and with His will He can take it away from man. Kikol Eilu HaDvarim V'af HaMe'arot Nichshavim Od Gashmiim, all previous nine are really part of the physical world. Aval Nishmat HaAdam Hi Davar Ruchani Shehu Yoter Gavoa Mikol Eilu. Very powerful line. The final plague is the plague of killing of the firstborn, which represents in the neshama of a person, which is even higher than all the physical realms of this world. And God is indeed control of all of this. And this is the purpose of the Ten Makos. As the Maharal ends in Source 11, V'zeh hayat tachlit eser ha-makot, the purpose of the Ten Commandments, She'ara kadosh baruch hu leparo, that God showed paro shemitach ha-laret, from beneath the ground, va'ad lemala, from the mishmei ha-shamayim, the very heavens, ein od milvado, there's none other like God. And this is our challenge on the Pesach night. When we read through the eser makos, right, we take that little bit of the wine out of dam, sardeya, kinim, it's not just enough to read by rote. There was blood and there was frogs and there was hail and there was, and going through the plague. What we have to do is to be able to learn the lessons of the plagues, that the lessons of the plagues was a lesson on how we could develop as individuals the appreciation and the recognition of God's divine power in all aspects of the world. What we need to do is to go beyond the words and understand, with the division of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi in particular, how this is showing God's control, God's involvement in this world, and to be able to awaken within us this appreciation and this recognition of God's oneness. One final note on the 10 plagues. We know in the Haggadah, which is something very fascinating, is that after we list the 10 plagues, we then speak about that on Kriyas Yamsuf, at the splitting of the Red Sea, the plagues were much more intense than they were in Egypt. It's that section which is called basic math in the Haggadah. We have something for everybody in the Seder night. So we have Rabbi Yossi Aglili saying, no, the experience of the punishment of the Egyptians at the sea was filled with 50 makos. And Rabbi Eliezer says, no, there were 200 makos. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, there were 250 makos. Just to understand what's going on before we understand this on a deeper level, what Rabbi Yossi Aglili is saying is that in Egypt, the Egyptians said, Etzpe Elokimi, this is the finger of God. But by the splitting of the sea, they saw the Yad of God. They saw the hand of God. So here's the basic math. If the finger is 1, the hand is 5. Right? That's basic math. So if there were 10 plagues in Egypt, Etzpe Elokim, there were 10 plagues, so each finger represents what? 10 plagues. If now we see the hand of God at the sea, so if one finger represents 10 plagues, 5 fingers represent 50 plagues. And that's why Rabbi Yossi Aglili says there were 50 plagues. So no, comes along Rabbi Eliezer and said, no, that each plague had 4 components to it. Evrav, Zam. So if each plague had 4 components to it, so that makes it now not 50 plagues, but 200 plagues. Rabbi Akiva said, no, each plague had 5 components to it, and that makes it 250 plagues. That's called technicality. So we understand what we're saying at the Seder night. Sometimes it just flies by us. But on a deeper level, why was it so that in Egypt they only got hit 10 times, but on the sea they got hit 50 times or 200 times or 250 times? Why was the sea so much more intense than in Egypt? So here is a beautiful Ramban in source 12. The Ramban says, you know, it's one of the most amazing things to see how the Egyptians just went through these 10 plagues. They're chasing after the Jews. They have them for sure in their hands. The sea is in front of them. The desert surrounding them. They're coming chasing them. And what happens? The sea splits open. The Egyptians see the sea split open. They go through the sea on dry land. Rabosa, if you see that God is so with these people, that the sea is splitting for them and it's dry land, the thing that you would expect them to do is what? Turn right around and go back home. What do? Hot in pursuit after them. Says the Ramban, fifth line down in Source 12, the Ein Bechol HaMoftim Kepela Hazeh, among all the miracles, among all the signs, there's nothing as wondrous as this. Bezeh Be'emet Shiga'on Lahem. This is craziness on their part. Ah, says the Ramban, as well as the Aruch HaShulchan, because they had such azus, they had such chutzpah, such audacity to walk in after seeing all of God's wonders in Egypt and seeing in front of them how the sea split for the Jews. So now they really deserve to get punished here. And that's why the punishment at the sea is far greater than the punishment earlier, because here they had the opportunity to learn about the oneness and the power of God, and they refused to see it. They refused to see it. So this is element one. Element one is the theme of the evening we're developing, is emuna in God, belief in God, faith in God. And we see this as a major theme through the 10 plagues, whose theme is to see the all-powerfulness of God, how God is in control from ground all the way up, and most particularly the climax, the nefesh adam, the nishmat adam, man, soul itself. Second area. The halachic section, where we see the theme as so basic. And that's in Source 13. Rabbi Gamliel used to say, anyone who has not explained these three things on Pesach has not fulfilled the mitzvah of the Seder, and the three things are Pesach, Matzah, and Emara. Each one of these elements, Pesach, the sacrificial lamb, the paschal lamb, the matzah, and the maror, also have as their deeper theme the concept of emunah, the concept of faith in God. In source 14, the or Gedaliahu, Rav Gedaliah Shur Zatzal, explains very simply. What does Pesach, the sacrifice of Pesach, represent? He says, around six lines down, Ki be'en chiyatzu b'nei Yisrael mitzrayim, at the time of the Exodus, haya galui shechina gdola, was a great revelation, harbe yoter mikfi hasagatam, way beyond their understanding. This was an isrusa de la'ela, an awakening from above, where God literally pasach, he had to jump over and extend himself beyond where the people were at to reveal himself to the people. The night of Pesach, the concept of Pesach, the concept of dilug, of skipping over, is the concept of God revealing himself, bechvodo ube'atzmo, God in his complete glory. God coming down was God himself, nobody else. The night of Pesach is the night where we saw God, where it was the greatest gilui shechina, the greatest revelation of godliness. And the Maharal explains in source 15, 16, and 17 that we have many of the laws connected with the sacrificial lamb are based on this theme of God's oneness and faith in God. That's why he says, it's very fascinating, that the sacrificial lamb had to be roasted completely. So we know in cooking that in any other method of cooking, if you boil it or if you bake it, what happens to the food when you do any of these procedures? It begins to fall apart. Break off. Pieces will break off. They come soft. What happens when you roast something? So it becomes a gush echad, it becomes one unit. It's all baked together. It's all roasted together. The roasted together, the top, the bottom, the whole section being roasted together is symbolic of oneness, which is again to inculcate within us oneness. And that's why you couldn't eat the Korban Pesach within two groups. You had to have one group eating it together. And it goes through a lot of the laws which really have as its theme the concept of one, where the, all the laws connected with the Korban Pesach are trying to bring us to the idea of Achdus, of God is one, God is unique. If Pesach represents God coming down and showing us his Gilui Shechina, so then Matzah is our response. God comes down, he reveals himself. As the verse in Song of Song says, Mashcheni, God pulls us, Acharecha, Narutza, we run after God. That's Matzah. Matzah, as Yor Gedaliahu explains, is that element without any haughtiness, without any pride. It's a simple bread which represents, with the asterisk is in source 8, Oto ha-nikuda asher yeshna b'chol ish Yisrael, that pintel ha-yid, that spark within every Jew, ha-nikuda ha-tara asher ein ba mashu chameitz, that component which does not have any aspect of chameitz, any aspect of leavened bread, v'nimshecha acharei hitkalut ha-shechina, and ran after the revelation of God. And that's why the Zohar calls matzah the bread, the ochel ha-emunah. Matzah is the food of faith. We trusted God, we ran after God, we didn't take any other provisions with us, we trusted that God would take care of us. Eating the matzah is the deepest, deepest expression of we have faith in you, God. The matzahs that the Jewish people baked, not even time to rise, running after God, not taking any other food with them, was saying on the deepest level, we believe in you, God, we have faith in you, we're grabbing the moment of inspiration and running after you, acharecha narutza. Wow. It's not eating a regular piece of matzah. It's eating. When we eat the matzah, we need to think about this food, what it really means. not on a, just a childish, simplistic level, oh, they didn't have time to bake bread, and therefore we have this matzah. No, what does it represent? They didn't have time to bake bread. It represents their willingness and their zealousness to run after God and not to worry about anything else. When we eat matzah, we're eating the food of emunah. And that's what we need to allow to enter within us as we eat the matzah. And finally, maror, the bitter herbs. So Sas Emes explains, also brought down the Or Gedaliahu in source 22, is that that which is bitter ultimately is for our good. And even exile itself, although at the time is Hester, at the time is hidden, and God is hidden, but indeed God is with us, and ultimately everything turns out for the good. He quotes here a beautiful Ramban, which is a fascinating insight. When Yaakov Avinu descends to Egypt, this is really the first time that the Jewish people are now going down to the Egypt experience. So the verse says, Anochi ered imach mitzrayma, God says, I'm going to go down with you to Egypt. And here the Ramban notes that the Targum Onkelos, the Aramaic translation, always throughout the Bible translates ered, I will go down, as iskale, I will reveal myself. When God comes down, he's just not coming down, he's coming down as a form of revelation. Here's the exception. Here the Aramaic translation translates it literally, that God is coming down, echut, ered, God is coming down. Ah, says the Ramban, but that's the whole point. Because when God is coming down to Egypt, that eskale, that revelation of God is not seen. We don't see God in Egypt. During the time of suffering, we can't see it. All we see is ered, that God is down there. It's only in retrospect that we're able to see the eskale, the revelation. And that explains, on a deeper level, why maror today is only midrabbanan, from the rabbis, not from the Torah. From the Torah, maror can only be eaten with the Korban Pesach and with matzah. As the Ruach Haim HaKadosh points out, and it's a very fascinating insight in Source 20, he says, on a technical level, do you know why we have maror on Pesach? Because anytime you're going to eat roasted food, you want to whet your appetite first. So you eat something sharp, and then that gets your tongue ready to eat the roasted food. So it's purely, it would seem like, a culinary type of reason for maror. You want to prepare yourself for the Korban Pesach. But on a much deeper level, what the Or HaChaim HaKadosh is saying is very simply. You can't have geula, you can't have redemption, without first having galus. The only exile, the only way you'll appreciate the Korban Pesach, the only way you'll appreciate the redemption, is if first you have the exile experience. The two have to be part and parcel, one with the other. It may only be at the redemption that you can appreciate why you had to go through the exile, but it's the exile and redemption work hand in hand. Today, when we don't have the symbol of redemption of the Korban Pesach, we don't have the exile stand by itself from the Torah. And that's why, says the Or Gedaliahu, something that perhaps we don't even notice, the order of Rabbi Gamliel is a little bit strange. Anyone who does not say these three things has not fulfilled its obligation. Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. That's not in chronological order. What should it be? It should be Maror, Matzah, and Pesach. But according to this, it makes a lot of sense. Because if you put Maror first, then you have no idea of what Maror is doing. If you have Pesach and you have Matzah, which is God's revelation and our response, so then you can stand back and look at the Maror and see it as part of the process of Pesach and Matzah. If we would have Matzah first, so Matzah is out of place conceptually and we don't understand what Matzah is all about. In summation of section 2, the theme of Pesach, God's revelation, matzah, the food of emunah, our response, and maror, that even in the bitterness, God is found there. That even in the difficult times, God is still there and very much a presence, even though we don't see him, all have the same theme of emunah, faith in God, oneness of God, seeing God in our lives. So if we've seen it in the story section of the Ten Plagues, we've seen it in the halachic section, Pesach, Matzah, Maror, let's now take a look, which I think is the most fascinating of the three, in the song section of the Haggadah. Somehow the song section of the Haggadah at the end of the night of Seder is something we look forward to. We have a lot of nice tunes and a lot of different customs of what to do, but we don't realize the tremendous depth that's found in these sections. So, not the one I'm going to speak about, but the Echad Miyodeya, who knows one? What's the refrain that we constantly say? That there's one God, Bashamayim uva'aretz, in the heaven and the earth. This is the refrain over and over again. But now it makes so much sense. That's the theme of Pesach. It's the theme of Pesach. We repeat that over and over again to try to drive that lesson home. However, the one I'd like to speak about, again briefly, is the final song of the evening, the grand finale, and that's the Chagiga, and probably the most deepest aspect of the whole night of the Seder. We're all familiar with Chagiga. Let's take a look at 24. This is the last paragraph, so it's all inclusive. Then came the Holy One, blessed be He, and smote the angel of death that slew the slaughterer, that slaughtered the ox, that drank the water, that quenched the fire, that burned the stick, that beat the dog, that bit the cat, that ate the kid, that father bore for two Zuzim, only one kid, only one kid. I did it backwards, but we're all familiar with the story. At first it starts with the kid, and then the cat eats it, and then the dog, and then the stick, and right? So I did it backwards, but we know the story. So what's going on here? This is a cute little story about a little kid that a father bought for two Zuzim, for two coins, and you know, we have this, all these events that happen to this poor little kid. Absolutely not. The commentators see here a tremendous amount of depth and symbolism for the Jewish people. Two approaches, one in 25 and then one in 26. Many commentators see the history of Israel, the lone kid, as a song's theme. The father of Avinu Shebashamayim, God in heaven, selected the lone kid when giving two Zuzim. What are the two Zuzim? The two tablets of the covenant. So the two coins represent the two tablets, what made us unique, that made us the chosen nation. The animals, objects, and people who subsequently destroy and beat one another are the various nations that persecuted, subjugated, and oppressed the one lamb among the 70 wolves throughout history. Ultimately, the Holy One, blessed be He, will come and bring the final redemption of His beloved kid. Similar to this is the Gaon of Vilna, who looks at the two Gidim, as representing the two animals that Yaakov brought to Yitzchak on the night of Pesach in order to acquire the blessing, and then all the different aspects are different things that happen in Jewish history. The dog is Paro, the stick is Moshe's staff, the ox is the kingdom of Edom, the slaughter is Mashiach ben Yosef, and he goes through with scriptural proof what all of these things, how all these things are connected. However you may want to look at it, however you want to understand this as being Jewish history, it has one theme to it, Source 27. The central theme is that God is the master of the world. No story ends without God. God must, whether we like it or not, want it or not, recognize it or not, enter into every story of our individual as well as our collective life. God is the master of all fate who conducts the affairs of the world in His fashion, and His fashion does not only conform to the fashion we design or prefer, so that occasionally the world appears chaotic, unfair, and inexplicable. But everything comes down, all the chains of life, to one thing, and that is God and standing in front of Him for din v'cheshbon, a judgment. And this essay ends, this comes from a book, Kos Eliyahu, by Rabbi Eliyahu Safran, a contemporary book, who says that God is maestro who brings together conflicting, seemingly destructive forces into a harmonious, meaningful historical pattern. The apparent chaos is a mirage. The unseen divine order is reality. The parting message of the long Seder night is one word. There is a Seder. There is an order. And the Chagiga ends with this idea that God is ultimately in control, that there is a Seder, that there is an order, that there is a God in heaven, and no matter all the different events that may happen in this world, there's going to be one bottom line, the Atah Kadosh Baruch Hu, and then God comes down. And we need to understand that the whole world and all the different events that happen, which seemingly may be random events, all are within a pattern of God running the world. This is the theme of the night of Pesach. This is the theme of Emunah, belief in God, and understanding God's control of the world. Last idea for the morning. If we understand this, at least on an intellectual level, that Pesach is Rosh Hashanah, is the new year of Emunah, of belief in God. And as Tziva Shalom points out, our entire year's level of Emunah, of belief, comes from this evening. It's a very powerful evening to connect with God. And the ideas that are found within the Seder are trying to instill within us the steam of oneness of God, God's control, God is running the world. So the final question for the morning is, where does that leave us as individuals? How can we take this theme and be able to apply it to our lives and apply it to the Seder night? So I think that we can begin with where we ended, the Chag Gadya. There's a beautiful interpretation in Source 29 that views the goat as the man's soul which descends, sold by the Father, to his earthly existence and suffers through the trials and tribulations of life as it moves. Zuzin, which are literally the coins, is from the word zaz, to move through life, about in this world. Each stanza of the song symbolizes another phase and stage of life as we know it. As life progresses and years pass by, man is reminded, Chag Gadya, Chag Gadya, unique soul, unique soul. That one gedi, that one precious item that God has brought down, is referring to us. What have you accomplished on this world? What are you doing? Ultimately, one must answer to a higher source. So the end of the evening is a very powerful evening. The last two words that we say at the Seder night, of Chag Gadya, one kid, is really saying to ourselves, one neshama, one soul, where are you? Where are you? And I think that this is the call of the Seder night. The Or Gedaliahu speaks about this on a very powerful level in Source 30, where he says that there are times in life that every individual gets inspired to move beyond where they're at, to reach for much higher realms. It's like what Rabbi Kaplan speaks about love. If you've never experienced love, no words can ever describe love. And I think the same holds true for inspiration. No one's ever really had that feeling of inspiration, so then I can't possibly describe it today. But since I hold that we've all had this feeling at more than one time in our life, where we really feel this inner call to just move, he says that normally we might respond, well, let me think it through, let me see how I should move, let me go step by step, let me be cautious, which is generally speaking a very, very good attitude. However, when those major inspirations come in life, when those Pesach moments come of Gilui Shechina, the revelation of God, so our response has to be matzah. It has to be acharecha narutza, to run after you, God. It took the Jewish people the 49 days, the interim days between Pesach and Shavuot, to work through that level they reached on the night of the Seder. And perhaps we may need that time as well. But says the Or Gedaliahu, that intensity, which was found at the Seder night of Gilui Shechina, the revelation of God, that the Jewish people responded to immediately, that same revelation is found every single year on the Pesach night. Rabbi Katz, Living Inspired, 31. The spiritual forces operating at Pesach time each year are such that the Jewish people, and in fact any individual Jew, can achieve the impossible if these forces are used. An attempt to leap up, to reach a whole new level of sensitivity, a personality development, can have a degree of success if undertaken on Pesach, which may be far more difficult at any other time. Pesach means leaping over. At a deeper level, the connotation is that of leaping over levels of growth, which would ordinarily have to be attained one at a time, and there's a special divine assistance offered at this time. Chag Gadya, it's the call of the Pesach night, of to leap and change and grow and move beyond ourselves. To actually decide to take on something completely new or to really deepen that which we're doing. So, okay, it may take us till Shavuos to really make it part of ourselves. But at least we have that commitment. At least we understand that there's a call going out and we need to respond to the call. Final idea for the morning. I'd like to suggest that it's the concept of Emunah, it's the concept of faith in God that gives us that fuel to make that leap and to make that change. If we're able to really understand what faith is all about and really connect to the oneness of God emotionally, not only intellectually, that we really feel God and we strengthen our faith this evening, so then that gives us the encouragement, gives us the connection to make that move that we know we should be making. And here I'd like to conclude with some ideas from the Lubavitcher Rebbe in a book called Toward a Meaningful Life, which is edited by Rabbi Jacobson, a very, very insightful, well-written book, where he speaks about, in Source 32, our reason, if it is well developed, comes to the obvious conclusion that reality is far greater than that which we can experience with our senses and our intellect. We come to realize that this reality is not a product of the mind, but that the mind is a product of this reality. Reason may lead us to the door of this reality, but we need different tools to enter. But all this is still not faith, for faith is the pure experience of God. Reason may allow us to function in this world and make sense of our lives, but without faith we would have no basis for life. We could not connect to God, the absolute reality. Faith is a power that touches you and you alone. It is the humble truth that is as plain as it is real, as quiet as it is forceful. God's reality emits wondrous music for us to hear, but the hustle and bustle of the material world often drown out the melody. Faith is a tool with which we can hear the music. Reason may tell us how to live, but faith tells us why to live. To lead a meaningful life, we must unite our faith and reason. And he says at the end of this essay, he says, in 35, at the end of the day, only you know how sincerely you're searching for truth. You have only yourself and God to answer to. If you are genuinely searching, then you will already have begun your relationship with God. And as with all dynamic relationships, this search is a process. We begin from the limited perspective of our own existence, climbing upward step by step until we come to understand that God is the absolute reality of which we have an extension and not vice versa. And he says that this is a process we need to go through every single day. We must allow our inner sublime tools, 36, to speak. We know there's a God just as we know we have a soul. Not because we can see or touch it, but we can feel it. We feel the soul's effect. We sense its hunger for meaning, its thirst for knowledge. And we feel its satisfaction when we nourish it. And this is what we need to do. He says in the end of 38, in the climate of spiritual darkness, we all have the ability and responsibility to let our faith shine forth and then integrate it into our daily lives. Talk about your faith with family and friends. Cultivate it through study and prayer. Actualize it through good deeds and charity. For a moment, stop what you are doing. Let your mind be silent. Allow yourself to hear the small, still voice of God. When you set yourself free, you will realize that faith is much closer to the surface than you had imagined. Remember, regardless of anything else, God's absolute reality exists. The only question is how you will respond, how true to yourself you will be in searching for it. In the meantime, God is waiting for you. And I think this is what Pesach night is all about. There is this faith found within each and every one of us. It's something we deal with day in and day out. It's trying to find meaning in this world, trying to find a relationship with God. And it's a very personal thing. It's between us and God alone. And this is a struggle that we have day in and day out. But we have to allow that feeling of faith, which is really within us, to allow it to be actualized, to allow it to come to fore. That's really the night of Pesach. The night of Pesach is to sit back and listen to that inner voice of faith that we have within us. It's a night where God, so to speak, awakens that feeling with beautiful music that we resonate to. We want to come out. That faith wants to burst forth. Pesach night is the time to allow it to burst forth, to allow it to open up, and then act upon it. If we have this faith, if we feel in love with God, if we feel a connection to God, so then how can we be better? How can we connect on a more deeper level? And that's the question of Pesach. That's the Chagiga of Pesach. Where are we, precious soul? Are we able to take the night of the Seder, respond to the Gilui Shechina, respond to the Pesach, and say, you know what, tonight I'm going to be a matzah. Tonight I'm going to be a vehicle of faith. I'm not just going to eat the matzah, I'm going to act the matzah. I'm going to take that leap forward, I'm going to act on that emunah, on that faith within me, and I'm going to make a decision, whatever it may be, to change in a small way, to become a better person in a small way. I'm going to allow the Pesach experience to be a reality for my life, and that's going to allow me to be changed as a person. Chag Kasher Sameach.